This is a special report from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. There have never been terrorist attacks like this previously on U.S. soil. The World Trade Center and the Pentagon attacked today. Four U.S. jetliners hijacked and crashed. It's an extraordinary day requiring an extraordinary response. Here's President Bush.
We have taken all appropriate security precautions to protect the American people. Our military at home and around the world is on high alert status, and we have taken the necessary security precautions to continue the functions of your government.
All domestic air traffic has been shut down by the FAA. We will continue to bring all the news as it happens to you right here on this special report in depth. But first, this news update.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Korva Coleman. Three major buildings in the United States came under attack today. The Pentagon and both towers of the World Trade Center in New York City were struck today by large passenger planes. The massive twin towers in New York collapsed into city streets. A fourth United airliner was hijacked. It crashed outside of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. It is not clear if that plane was connected to the apparent attacks. The Federal Aviation Administration has shut down air traffic nationwide for the first time in its history. American Airlines and United Airlines confirm they each lost two aircraft. NPR's Mary Ann Akers reports from Chicago.
The FAA has issued what is called a nationwide ground stop. No airplanes, commercial or private, are allowed to take off from any U.S. airport. An FAA spokesman says the earliest this ground stop would be lifted is tomorrow at noon, and even that's not definite. The FAA says that all domestic commercial aircraft not involved in today's terrorist attack have landed safely at airports around the country. Both American Airlines and United Airlines have confirmed they've lost two jets each. The airlines say they're working closely with the FBI to contact family members and to assist with the terrorist investigation. Some airports are closed entirely, including all six major airports in New York and Washington, but each one of the 460 FAA towers are closed around the country. Mary Ann Akers, NPR News, Chicago.
White House correspondent Don Gagne reports President Bush was attending a morning event in Florida. He was safe when the apparent terror attacks occurred. Then, after the Pentagon was attacked, the White House was evacuated.
At 9:41, word went out that the White House was to be evacuated. When we first heard of the apparent attack on the World Trade Center towers, people were still allowed into the White House grounds. There was a lot of trying to figure out exactly what was going on. We got a brief statement from the president down in Florida, again at that point calling it an apparent terrorist attack. Then when we got the news of the Pentagon, the White House was evacuated. And there were heavily armed Secret Service and park police who were escorting people out. We were initially told to stay in Lafayette Park, which is, of course, right across the street from the White House. Then, as the morning progressed, the perimeter continued to grow until it extended out to where it is right now, three, four blocks on either side of the White House.
NPR's White House correspondent Don Gagne. The news of the apparent attacks has prompted a number of cancellations. Major League Baseball has put off all of today's games. The ceremony for TV's Emmy Awards has been canceled for this weekend. The nation's financial markets are all closed. This is NPR. The military is on its highest state of alert following the plane crash into the Pentagon and the Twin Towers in New York City. NPR's John McChesney is standing at the Pentagon a few hundred yards away from the crash site.
And I've been watching the fire departments here pour water into the windows of the Pentagon adjacent, very closely adjacent to where the aircraft plunged into the side of the Pentagon. There's a huge 75-foot gap with collapsed structure where the aircraft actually hit, but many, many offices to the left and right of that, particularly to the left of it, have been burning furiously all day. They're still pouring water in there. There's still a lot of fire. I'm looking at medical tents that have been set up here temporarily and a lot of medics and doctors across the street. We are standing here. I'm standing here with a group of volunteer litter bearers who are waiting to go into the building to carry out any wounded that they can find.
NPR's John McChesney reporting from the Pentagon. The Defense Department also reports that senior Pentagon officials are unharmed. President Bush says today's terror attacks are a test of America's resolve, but he says, we, quote, we will show the world that we will pass this test. The president made these remarks from a military base in Louisiana, where he assured Americans that the U.S. government is functioning. He was then whisked away by airplane. Pool reporters now say that the president has landed at the Strategic Air Command headquarters at Offutt Air Force Base in Nebraska. President Bush, Vice President Cheney, and all other government officials have been whisked to safety following the attacks in New York City and Washington earlier today. I'm Korva Coleman, NPR News in Washington.
This is a special report from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Tuesday, September 11th, 2001, is being compared with Sunday, December 7th, 1941. By far, the worst terrorist attack on American soil happened today, as four commercial airliners were hijacked, two crashed into the World Trade Center in New York City, both of the Twin Towers subsequently collapsed into the streets of New York. Another of the hijacked aircraft crashed into the Pentagon, causing heavy casualties. The fourth crashed into a wooded area in southwestern Pennsylvania. Casualty estimates overall have not been issued as yet, but they can only be high. NPR's Peter Kenyon has been bringing us up to date all afternoon long. And Peter, what do you have for us?
Well, as you say, the casualty rates are beginning to grow in terms of numbers of people showing up at hospitals in New York and elsewhere. But the people there just say they barely think they've seen the tip of the iceberg, and it's going to get much, much worse. As you know, tens of thousands of people work in the Trade Center, and more tens of thousands visit there every day. The numbers could just be huge. There were some 356 people aboard or so, aboard the planes, both in the World Trade Center, the Pentagon, and in Pennsylvania. And we have confirmed in the last hour or so this report, an emergency call from the bathroom, apparently, of that flight on its way to, over Pennsylvania, saying it was, in fact, hijacked and it did go down. So I feel pretty confident that all four were part of this pattern at this point, from what we know. The reactions are coming in from the president, who has now landed in Nebraska, a Strategic Air Command base there, and also from in New York, Mayor Rudolph Giuliani and Governor George Pataki held a news conference, and Mayor Giuliani had this reaction to what he'd seen.
Mr. Mayor, you were one of the first people down there. Can you describe the scene in your own words, what you saw down there?
Well, I don't know that I'm really able to describe it. It was the most horrific scene I've ever seen in my whole life. We saw the World Trade Center in flames, a big gaping hole all the way on the top of it. We could see people jumping from the top of the building. And then we went into Barclay Street, 75 Barclay Street, I think it was, and we were there when the building collapsed, and it collapsed in part on 75 Barclay Street. So we were trapped in the building for maybe 10 or 15 minutes, trying to get out different exits. We finally went through a basement and came out 100 Park Place.
Did you ever fear for your own safety, sir?
Sure, yeah.
What went through your mind?
I don't think anything went through my mind other than making sure that we all remained calm and found an exit and just tried to figure out the most intelligent thing to do. Probably the same thing that went through the minds of 10,000 other New Yorkers who I could see on the streets. And I really have to commend them. If you really want to know what New Yorkers are all about, you just watch the way in which they handled themselves. They didn't panic. They moved deliberately. They moved swiftly. But they didn't hurt each other. They helped each other. I mean, these are just the most wonderful people in the world.
Mayor Giuliani also said in that news conference that the death toll will be more than any of us can bear. And he said those numbers probably won't be known at least until tomorrow and possibly even the next day.
Peter, there was we've had reports that there are other buildings near the World Trade Center that might be close to collapse themselves as a result of the damage at the World Trade Center. But clearly, the fear throughout much of the day was that this was just the first of a wave of attacks. Do we have any information about that?
As you said, the sequence sowed a kind of a panic. The first crash early in the morning, then the second one just a few minutes later, and then, of course, the Pentagon being hit an hour later at about the same time that the tower started collapsing in New York, and then the plane crash in Pittsburgh. It just clearly the most largest coordinated effort that anyone can remember. There are no signs that anyone is saying at this point around the country of any further attacks, but clearly not just in the U.S., but around Europe and at American and European installations in Africa and the Middle East and other countries, security has been cranked up remarkably. Flights have been shut down, security has been enhanced, embassies, you name it, public buildings have either been evacuated or beefed up security all around the world.
All of the other aircraft that were in the air at the time of these attacks occurred have now been accounted for, so there are no more hijacked
That's
airplanes.
Right. Yeah, the FAA says everyone is accounted for. I think there was like 22 flights or so in the air a couple of hours ago, and everything is now down and accounted for. So we're not expecting any more reports of unforeseen plane crashes or hijackings. So if that was all that this attack was, then maybe that is the end of it. But of course, this is all still unfolding.
Thanks very much, NPR's Peter Kenyon.
Thanks, Steve.
Appreciate your keeping us up to date this afternoon. There has been probably everyone in the United States has been affected by this one way or another today, but obviously the biggest effect has been in the city of New York. Joining us now on the phone is WNYC reporter Mary Ann McCune. Thanks for joining us again. Hello? And she is not there. We'll get back to her. That was my error. We'll get back to her in a moment. Here with me in the studio is Philip Wilcox, a former ambassador at large and coordinator for counterterrorism at the U.S. State Department during the Clinton administration. And also joining us now is Clint Van Zandt, who was an FBI agent for 25 years, now runs Van Zandt and Associates, which looks at threat assessments nationally and internationally. And Mr. Van Zandt, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And obviously, threat assessment, who could have anticipated this?
Well, I think we all anticipated this. 3 weeks ago, Bin Laden issued a statement that he was going to go after the United States because of our continued support of Israel. As late as last week, a Bin Laden spokesperson allegedly called a London newspaper and said that there would be attacks upon U.S. interests. The State Department issued an advisory as of Friday concerning the potential for terrorist attack. The only issue is, could we have anticipated this? And I think the answer is, the way it took place, we could. You know, we always get hit after we close the barn door. We've closed the door to driving a truck bomb in the basement of the FBI building, but the skies, of course, is still wide open, and that's the logical way they would come at us, and the Trade Center is the logical target. So hindsight being 2020, it's something that we could anticipate such a group might go after. The timing is the interesting thing.
And the timing within the, you mean referring to that 3 week ago warning?
Well, the 3 week
clearly
ago
this,
warning.
This took more than 3 weeks to prepare.
Oh, this would have taken months. This is a type of operation that you prepare, something like the attack upon the USS Cole, that you prepare to do it, and then you wait till a significant time. Now, we know that tomorrow in Manhattan, one of Bin Laden's lieutenants who was involved in the attacks on the U.S. embassies in 1998 was scheduled to be sentenced in Manhattan. I think it remains to be seen if, in fact, these attacks, which would have come at some time anyway, may have been coordinated around that incident, around that sentencing that was to take place.
And again, we are just speculating at this point that Osama bin Laden is the person
absolutely,
or the organization responsible for this. We have no information to that degree. And Ambassador Wilcox, again, as you were listening to some of the things we were hearing, you were nodding in agreement, yet surely the most important element of today's events is that this is a huge terrorist attack on the soil of the United States, unprecedented. That is what, and the scale of it is new.
Absolutely unprecedented. The United States does not have a long history of massive terrorism in the United States. We have had our share of smaller scale terrorism. Much of it has been domestically generated. If indeed this attack came from abroad, it is absolutely without precedent, far beyond the devastation of the first World Trade Center bombing. Neil, let me say a word about Islam. I think most Americans understand, but it bears repeating that while the Islamist terrorist phenomenon is a very serious one, it is a deviation. It is not intrinsic in the Islamic faith. All world religions, unfortunately, have bred their fanatic deviationist fringes who have carried out acts of terrorism. We have to remember that. The warning aspect is a very difficult one for law enforcement and intelligence officials. There are dozens of warnings every week. Mm-hmm. It is very difficult to sift among these and to anticipate which ones are real.
Yeah.
And we seem every other week to hear reports of a credible threat against U.S. Facilities somewhere in the world and an embassy evacuated.
If we react to every one of these threats, we would paralyze ourselves. And, of course, that's what the terrorists want us to do.
Joining us now from New York is reporter Terry Sheridan, a reporter for member station WBGO. She is outside St. Vincent's Hospital in Manhattan. That's north of the World Trade Center. That's one of the big hospitals in downtown Manhattan. Terry, are you with us?
Yes, I am. I'm about 2 miles north of the World Trade Center, and in fact, we can still see the smoke billowing where the Twin Towers used to be here in Greenwich Village.
Now, this is St. Vincent's has to be one of the big trauma centers that's involved in today's operation.
Right. This is about the closest trauma center to the World Trade Center in Greenwich Village. So far, the number is 209 people have been brought here, 18 in critical condition, 3 have died. We just got word that one of those 3 was a firefighter who was working on the rescue. Hospital officials and chaplains said most of the people who have been brought in were people who are at the plaza or on the street. They have not brought in anybody yet who was actually in the building.
Could you give us those numbers one more time, please?
209 were brought in, 18 critical, 3 have died.
How many critical? Your phone broke up there.
18 are in critical condition.
Okay. And these are, as far as I'm aware, the first confirmed casualties?
Yes, they are.
Okay.
At least at this hospital. They've been brought to other hospitals, it's just going to be, until the final numbers are in, the magnitude of the casualties is just mind-boggling.
St. Vincent's, as you mentioned, a big emergency room and quite capable. What is the flow of people in there per hour? Do you know that?
That I do not know.
Okay.
That I do not know. I can just tell you right now, for instance, there are 4 ambulances from throughout the tri-state area lined up. There have been city buses coming in, bringing in injured, some of the less injured, those with smoke inhalation, those with minor bumps and bruises. But it's like a assembly line here. As soon as they drop people off, they're out, getting more people in. I've seen some of the same ambulances 2 or 3 times in the hour and a half that I've been here.
And are those the sirens of ambulances that we're hearing in the background?
Sirens of ambulances and police. Now, for instance, the police car that's right in front of me now is from South Hackensack, New Jersey. Some of the ambulances also have been from New Jersey. I've seen ambulances from Long Island, Westchester, and Rockland up in New York State.
So this is, Hackensack is a good long ways away from the World Trade Center.
Yes, it is. Hackensack is in New Jersey. It would probably be, on a good day of traffic, it would probably be 45 minutes, 60 minutes away.
The activity, as far as you can tell, is simply ferrying casualties from the south part of Manhattan Island, from the World Trade Center area, up there to St. Vincent's.
Yes, that's what they're doing. They're just whether police cars, ambulances, as I said, city buses have been brought in, just bringing them up. The streets are deserted of cars, at least down here in Greenwich Village, and it's all just getting people here. There was about 500 people in front of the hospital earlier donating blood. They had to send some people away, or actually they brought city buses in, sent them to St. Clair's Hospital up in Midtown, where there was more of a demand because they just couldn't handle the need of all the New Yorkers who showed up here to donate blood.
And any other reactions from the people in and around St. Vincent's Hospital?
Everyone is dumbfounded. And it's slowly among people in the media, among people that have spoke to cops, hospital workers, it's slowly starting to realize that we know people who work in the World Trade Center. And you just start to think and wondering, well, what happened to them? Did they get out? And then you go right back into your job. But that's pretty much it. This is horrible, but there's that little thing that this could be more horrible than even I could imagine.
There is the unbelievable energy, and you have to say the rush of dealing with the crisis. But as people get a moment to think about the enormity of what's happened, it has to be stunning.
It is. I've seen people break down on the street. They've come up and asked me, what have you heard? What have you heard? And throughout the morning, when I told them what I had heard, some of them would just break down.
Terry, thanks very much.
You're very welcome.
Terry Sheridan speaking with us from outside St. Vincent's Hospital in the southern part of Manhattan in Greenwich Village, one of the main trauma centers where casualties from today's attack at the World Trade Center are being ferried by, as we heard, ambulance, by police cars from all over the New York metropolitan area and by city buses. Terry Sheridan, a reporter for member station WBGO. We're going to be continuing with live coverage throughout the remainder of this afternoon, this evening, and this night, as word continues to come in on these attacks in New York City, at the World Trade Center, and also at the Pentagon. We'll bring you the latest news. We hope to have very shortly a news conference from the FBI. I'm Neil Conan, and you're listening to a special report coming to you from NPR News. This is a special report from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. As I mentioned earlier, we are still awaiting a news conference from the FBI. As soon as that happens, we will bring it to you live. Joining me are in the studio Philip Wilcox, a former ambassador at large and coordinator for counterterrorism at the U.S. State Department during the Clinton administration. And on the line with us is Clint Van Zandt, a former FBI agent for 25 years now. Chief Executive of Van Zandt & Associates, which does threat assessment nationally and internationally. And Mr. Van Zandt, when we were talking earlier, you talked about the warning that may have been given, an ambiguous warning at best, by Osama bin Laden to a phone call to various magazines. But there were people who were assessing this threat. As I understand it, you were one of the people who thought this might be imminent.
Well, I did a print interview yesterday, and the reporter who asked the question, she asked what would be the next level of terrorism that we would see, and I suggested because we've been able to successfully button up buildings and stop car bombs from driving into the basement, we've pushed them away from embassies, FBI buildings, that the next logical way to come in is to come in through the sky. I hate to see that happen in 24 hours again, but I'm sure the ambassador and his experience and other people in this area, we've looked at this for years and looked at the vulnerability that we have for that type and level of attack.
And let me also introduce Philip Hyman, the author of Terrorism and America, the Deputy Attorney General during the first Clinton administration under Janet Reno, now a law professor at Harvard Law School. And thank you for joining us, sir.
You're very welcome. Pleasure to be there.
And again, could we get your response, your reaction to today's dreadful events?
I don't know how to quickly summarize it. I think this is a quite momentous change in the scale of terrorism in the United States. I think, the comparisons to Pearl Harbor on the television are exaggerated, but I think this will be, I think this will affect our foreign and domestic policies very substantially. I think it's an order of magnitude different from anything we've seen.
Different from Pearl Harbor? Again, we've been hearing these analogies all day. In what way? That was obviously...
I'd be very surprised if we have something like a continuing war on our hands, a mammoth. I think we're going to have to worry a great deal about whoever did it. If it's bin Laden, it's bin Laden, or whoever else did it, the capacity to impose that type of damage several times a year, that would be horrible. But that's very different from going to war with Japan and Germany.
Indeed. But some of the domestic changes that you might anticipate following today's events?
I think we'll have vastly tighter security. I think we're going to have more spying on groups that talk violence and and promise violence. There's if this involves as many people as I think it probably involves, and as Clint Van Sant and Ambassador Wilcox think it involves, there was a failure, something of a failure of intelligence about detecting it. I think we'd have to predict, do our best to do the type of prevention that involves keeping resources and access to places even more secure, although we've got something like 6,000 federal buildings and God knows how many skyscrapers.
And national landmarks. I mean,
And national landmarks.
So many targets, you could not possibly protect them all.
Yeah, though at this point, I think I would... These were so symbolic, the Pentagon and the World Trade Center, that I would look for... I would do a lot of protecting of very symbolic locations for a while. If they blew up the World Trade Center, I'd have a lot of protection around Wall Street. And I worry a lot about anything in Washington that resembled the Pentagon.
Ambassador Wilcox, is this kind of disruption to American society, it certainly has to be a goal of the terrorist, yet there doesn't seem to be any alternative to it.
Well, I think we have to manage the risk. The risk is higher than we thought. We knew that terrorism was a threat, and we'd taken security measures in this country. We did not imagine this kind of scenario outside of the blockbuster movies and terrorist novels, but it's come to pass, and we've seen that even with conventional means, terrorists can cause enormous loss of life and damage and disruption. Surely there are new security measures that must be taken. We'll have to reexamine our civil aviation security and airport security. We'll have to do more for intelligence, but I want to emphasize again that there is no fail-safe series of steps here that can absolutely guard against such future attacks. We do what we can while preserving our free institutions and our ability to get on with our lives.
Clint Van Zandt, I wanted to ask you whether there was a degree of complacency amongst all of us. I mean, I'm not trying to pin blame on any individual or any specific organization for that matter, but this idea that other than the World Trade Center bombing, three, 4 years ago, there hadn't been international terrorism in the United States.
Well, let's look at the area of civil aviation security. I think for years we've falsely rested in the security that underpaid, overworked, and many times undereducated and trained people who are working the metal detectors at the airport provide that thin blue line for us to keep us safe. Now, I think investigation is going to have to show whether there were weapons, whether the weapons smuggled through the metal detectors, whether they were smuggled on board by supporters of whatever group that did this. So there's a lot of information we have to gain yet, but I think that the innocence that we lost at in Oklahoma City pales toward the innocence now. But, having seen America, and I'll share with you something. I'm on an internet site of former FBI agents, and I looked at that very quickly today. And there are, interestingly enough, and I've never seen anything like this, dozens, of retired FBI agents asking if they could go back in and help to man an FBI field office simply to handle paperwork to allow the regular agents to go out and do the investigation. I mean, that reminds me of something that you would see in World War II, where old Navy veterans are coming back in, getting on the carriers and going out to sea again, that level of national response.
All right. Thanks very much. And hang with us. But we want to recap what we know at this particular hour. Much of the country has ground to a halt in the aftermath of the worst terrorist attack ever in the United States. Four passenger jets today crashed after apparently being hijacked. Two of them slammed into the World Trade Center towers in New York. A third plane crashed into the Pentagon outside of Washington, D.C. A fourth went down in the woods outside of Pittsburgh. Two were American Airlines jets, two United Airlines. It's not yet clear which plane crashed into which building. Eventually, both of the huge twin Trade Center towers collapsed, spewing dust and chaos throughout lower Manhattan in New York. Emergency rooms throughout the New York City area are still crowded. No one knows how many people died today or how many were injured. 50,000 people normally work in the World Trade Center. Tens of thousands of others work in the Pentagon. New York Mayor Rudolph Giuliani spoke to reporters about an hour ago. He would not speculate on the number of dead. He did say that it could be days before we know for sure. He did say the number is bound to be more than any of us can bear. Airports are closed throughout the country. Government workers and many others have been sent home from Washington, D.C. and surrounding states. Children were sent home from school early. President Bush is at an airbase in Nebraska, said to be planning to convene a meeting of his top national security advisors by teleconference. And speculation continues about who did this and why. That, again, the situation where we stand now. At 3:30 in the afternoon Eastern Time, as the day of horror following the attacks that began in New York City this morning continues. I'm Neil Conan. With me here in Studio 3A is Philip Wilcox, a former ambassador at large and coordinator for counterterrorism at the U.S. State Department during the Clinton administration. Philip Hyman, the author of Terrorism in America, deputy attorney general in the first Clinton administration, joins us on the line from Cambridge, Massachusetts, where he's a law professor at Harvard Law School. And also with us on the line is Clint Van Zandt, a former FBI agent for 25 years, who now runs Van Zandt and Associates, which assesses threats both nationally and internationally. And Philip Hyman, let me go to you. You have, when you were in office, certainly access to much greater information than you have access to today. Or you wouldn't be listening to National Public Radio. I doubt it very seriously. But in terms of the threat, the terrorist threat, is something on this scale something we should have anticipated?
I don't know how you estimate whether something like this is likely to happen. We've always known that there were forms of terrorism that were many times larger than anything that had been used. One of the interesting facts about terrorism is that since Nobel invented dynamite, overwhelmingly it's involved the same events. Blowing up buildings with dynamite, now we had the World Trade Center and the Oklahoma Mihrab building using fertilizer-type bombs, taking hostages, either in planes or elsewhere, and assassination. And terrorism experts and ordinary people have been able to imagine much worse things, but they haven't been done. Some of them are hard to do. Some of them aren't so hard to do. And suddenly we seem to have good-sized escalation today. I don't know how you anticipate it. Everybody knew it was possible, and everybody knew it hadn't happened.
Airplane hijacks, though, this is something we associate with D.B. Cooper and hijacks to Cuba 30 years ago. Was this something that, when you were in office, you were concerned about?
No. I think we've been quite relaxed about hijacking. We had one hijacking while I was in office from Cuba, not to Cuba, but I think we've become, I think one of the remarkable successes of law enforcement has been to stop airplane hijackings in the United States over that period, and I think we probably have been much too comfortable about the difficulty of hijacking a plane, either by getting the gun through the detector or by getting the gun on the plane first and then sending the people who are going to use it through the detector.
Ambassador Wilcox, one of the things we know that typical of preparations for military operations and various other things is to, you know, try to put yourself in the other guy's shoes, you know, try to anticipate how he might respond to something or how he might react in certain situations. I assume that happens in counterterrorism as well. There are people who try to B-team this in terms of, well, if I were Agent X of this terrorist cell, this is what I would do.
There are regular gaming exercises, counterterrorism scenarios in which the professionals get together and work out potential plans. But the breadth of human ingenuity is very wide, and one cannot always be prepared for every contingency. Certainly, we'll have to look more carefully now at our airport security. There is one gap, perhaps, in our larger counterterrorism strategy that we need to address more effectively. That is to deploy more effort and resources in dealing with those sources of violence and conflict overseas, which breed terrorism. I think we have reduced our effort in this respect in recent decades after the fall of the Soviet Union. There is an area where we could protect ourselves by me being more energetic abroad in various ways.
Let me ask you all to briefly, if you could, try to explain to us what you think changed today, what has happened today. And Philip Hyman up in Cambridge, let's start with you.
Well, I think that the way we feel about our personal security all over the country, not just in New York and Washington, is very different. And I think that there's going to be a lot of tendency to, I think that our politics will be very responsive to that. I think we'll very quickly look at security at airports, security in buildings, immigration controls. I think it's going to feel like a less free country in terms of where you can go and what you can do, and I think that's going to be because the people are going to feel that way. My guess is that it will affect our foreign policy, too. I think that attitudes towards the conflict between the Israeli and the Palestinians,
if that proves to have been the origin of this.
If, absolutely. I'm glad you said that. If that turns out to be the origin of it, I think it will, I think the country will turn sharply against the Palestinians, if that turns out to be the origin of it.
Clint Van Zandt, what do you think changed today?
Well, I think both as the ambassador and the professor suggest, for years we have gamed out terroristic type of scenarios, and my experience was that we always gave the terrorist much more credit than what we saw them actually capable of. Even the devastation of the attack upon the USS Cole was simply a rubber boat with explosives that we allowed to get too close to one of our ships. To see this level of coordination, this amount of money, manpower, logistics all brought together at one time has changed the law enforcement, has changed the anti-terrorist equation, I think, for the future. This is what now we have to start gaming against multiple scenarios. It's like the military needing to fight a war on three fronts. I think we have to anticipate our law enforcement and our anti-terrorist resources are going to have to be beefed up and are going to have to start gaming out scenarios that might only have been found in a Tom Clancy novel before this time.
Ambassador Wilcox.
Yes, indeed. We now have a much greater sense of vulnerability and exposure, whereas in the past we felt more protected and that massive acts of terrorism were something that happened in other countries. We also know now that the downside of globalization technology, the ease of air travel, the ease of communications, which makes us more vulnerable. All of this means that we must engage even more than we have with other governments, with other law enforcement intelligence agencies, working to resolve conflicts abroad to reduce the level of violence in general, a challenge to our diplomacy as well as to our law enforcement and intelligence agencies.
Thank you all very much. Very briefly, Clint Van Zandt, I just wanted to ask one quick question, and that is that as terrorists anticipate performing these acts, surely they anticipate possible retribution.
They have to anticipate that. I'm sure that should bin Laden or should one of the nation states have been involved in this, their fear is that the cruise missiles are going to fly. And I think as we found in the Gulf War, where we were after the leadership and that, and they were moving every 4 hours from bunker to bunker and place to place, I think that we're going to see an extra level of effort exerted by the United States to try to find those involved, and an even greater effort on the part of those who were involved to avoid detection. The game is out in the open right now, and I'm afraid this may yet be the first shot in this war that has more to come.
Clint Van Zandt, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Clint Van Zandt, a former FBI agent for 25 years, now runs Van Zandt and Associates. Philip Hyman, we also have to thank you and say goodbye to you. Philip Hyman is the author of Terrorism in America. He was Deputy Attorney General in the first Clinton administration, is now a law professor at Harvard Law School. Thanks very much.
You're very welcome.
And Ambassador Philip Wilcox, a former ambassador at large and coordinator for counterterrorism at the U.S. State Department during the Clinton administration, a career State Department officer, joins us here in Studio 3A. Thank you, sir, very much for coming in today.
Thank you. I'm a retired State Department officer, Neil. Thank
well,
you for inviting
okay,
me.
An important distinction. Our live coverage will continue throughout the afternoon and this evening. We'll be back with more after a short break. I'm Neil Conan. This is a special report from NPR News. NPR News will provide special coverage throughout the day and night to keep you informed of today's events. Events President Bush has described as an apparent terrorist attack. We'll continue here in Studio 3A until 4 p.m. Eastern Time. Then Noah Adams, Linda Wertheimer, and Robert Siegel will continue news coverage of today's events. NPR News will provide special news coverage throughout the day and night. This is NPR News. This is a special report from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. On this shocking and sobering day, we turn again to Philadelphia and to Terry Gross, the host of NPR's Fresh Air. Terry, thanks for helping out today.
Sure, Neil. You know, many of us really are in shock and can't quite find the words to describe our sorrow and anguish over today's terrorist attacks. So a little earlier, we called a writer who has a gift with words, Billy Collins. He's America's new poet laureate. I asked if he's been able to find the words to express his feelings.
Tragedy is unprecedented and momentous as this kind of leaves you mute in a way. Words are said to fail, although they should. This is the time when they probably should come to our rescue. I don't know. My sense is we've just, historically, I think we've lost our virginity today. We always had the sense in America that we've our shores have been inviolate. And, of course, there's Pearl Harbor, but that was in our national consciousness. It still took place somewhere in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. And I think today I just sense a terrific change in our sense of vulnerability and fragility. And it's certainly a deep strain that runs through so much poetry that the sense of our awareness that life is perishable and therefore more precious. I looked, as I was watching these horrific footage on the television, there was a shot where the World Trade Center's the smoke that was left after their destruction was in the background, and the Empire State Building was in the foreground. And for the first time, the Empire State Building looked just terribly vulnerable. It looked fragile, as if it could be just be pushed over. And I think it's, I just, for some odd reason, think of the Three Little Pigs, of just, you know, that the house can be blown down. As far as a poetic response to it, I really think that you could pick any poem, almost from any book, and that poem would be against what happened today. You could take Frost Stopping by Woods, or Whitman's Song of Myself, or Mary Oliver's Wild Geese. You could just open pin the tail on the donkey in a book of poems, and probably that poem that your finger lands on will be in some way speaking for life and speaking against what happened today.
Is there any poem that you've turned to today?
Well, I looked at the Yeats poem on being asked for a war poem, and that ends, tends to disqualify poets because war is such a crushing topic, and his preference is to make poems more personal. The poem ends by saying that the poet should please a young girl in the indolence of her youth or an old man upon a winter's night. And events that are so broad and historic and so full of ramification are almost crush an attempt to actually enclose them in a poem. But as I said, I think poems tend to be pro-life and pro-love, and I'd say almost any good poem is a poem against what happened today.
Billy, where do you live? Do you live in Brooklyn?
No, we live in northern Westchester, which is sort of out of harm's way today. But my wife came home from her office, which is in lower Westchester on the Hudson, and driving away, she could see the plume of smoke in lower Manhattan. And I think another thought that strikes me is for the rest of our lives, as New Yorkers at least, anytime we look at the skyline, we will see a vacuum there where the World Trade Centers were, and that's almost their own monument. You know, the monument to today, you might say, is the vacuum that's left by those two buildings, their ghost shadow that's left, that will always remain in the sky, you know, in the air, the monument of air.
Billy, any other thoughts you want to leave with us?
Well, I'm just thinking about the people in the buildings, and I'm hoping for their safety. Poems are said to be written, recollected in tranquility, to use Wordsworth's phrase. And in the heat of this, the heat and the smoke of this, and the broken glass of this awful moment, it's difficult to see things through the lenses of poetry. You know, I think. You know, you could, if you wanted to turn somewhere, one could do worse than read one of the Psalms today.
Well, Billy Collins, thank you so much for talking with us.
You're welcome, Terry.
Billy Collins is America's new poet laureate. Like Billy Collins, Frank Rich is trying to find the words to express his feelings today. He's the former theater critic for the New York Times and now writes an op-ed column. A little while ago, we called him at his home in Manhattan. You write a lot about New York. What's it like to see your city partially destroyed by these acts of terrorism?
It's really it's very upsetting. I mean, it's just, you know, you feel part of the heart of your city and the heart of your country is being ripped out, even beyond knowing any specific people that you love who may have been hurt or killed there. It's it really beggars the imagination, beggars description. I mean, it's a cliche to say it, but it's traumatizing.
We're going to have to interrupt this conversation that Terry Gross is having to take you live to Karen Hughes, a special counselor to the president, who's speaking live now in Washington.
And place them on high alert. The United States Secret Service immediately secured the President, the Vice President, and the Speaker of the House, and they are all safe. They have also secured members of the National Security Team, the President's Cabinet, and senior staff. As you know, President Bush was in Sarasota, Florida, when the first attack occurred this morning. Air Force One has now landed at Offutt Air Force Base in Omaha, Nebraska, and the President is in a secure location. He is in continuous communication with the Vice President and key members of his cabinet and national security team. Vice President Cheney and our National Security Advisor, Condoleezza Rice, are in a secure facility at the White House. I have just come from there. The Secretary of Transportation and other members of our White House senior staff are gathered at a command center there, and we are coordinating with other branches of our federal government. The Secretary of Defense remains at the Pentagon, and the Secretary of State is en route back to Washington from his trip to South America. President Bush is conducting a meeting of the National Security Council as we speak. They are meeting President Bush from his location and other members from different locations in Washington and other locations. As many of you have been reporting, the Federal Aviation Administration ordered all airports closed, and all planes which were in the air were directed to land at the nearest airport. International flights were diverted to alternate locations outside of the United States. Transportation Secretary Mineta has directed the Federal Aviation Administration to suspend operations until at least noon tomorrow. So no airline flights will operate until at least then and until the FAA announces that operations will be resumed. Secretary Mineta has also issued orders controlling the movement of all vessels in United States navigable waters. The Federal Emergency Management Agency has activated 8 urban search and rescue task forces in New York, and 4 of these highly trained teams are at work here in Washington at the Pentagon. Every federal agency has implemented continuity of operations plans to make sure the government continues to function effectively. While the markets closed today because of the situation in Manhattan, the United States financial system has continued to operate. Banks have been open all day. The Federal Reserve has operated regularly and continuously. The Department of Health and Human Services has mobilized medical personnel and supplies to provide help to local authorities who are working so diligently to respond and try to help the victims of these terrible attacks. President Bush has committed the full resources of our intelligence and law enforcement communities to identify and bring to swift justice those responsible for these despicable attacks. The Department of Justice is setting up a hotline for families who fear that their relatives may have been victims of one of these attacks, and we will be announcing that telephone number shortly. Our fellow citizens and our freedom came under attack today, and no one should doubt America's resolve. President Bush and all our country's leaders thank the many Americans who are helping with rescue and relief efforts. We ask our fellow Americans for your prayers for the victims, for their families, for the rescue workers, and for our country. Thank you all very much, and we will continue to update you as information is available and confirmed.
Karen, how long will the President stay in Nebraska?
Will he return to the White House?
Will he go back to Washington, Karen? Will he address the nation?
Karen Hughes, the special counselor to the President, leaving the microphones and all of those questions unanswered. Again, we apologize for interrupting Terry Gross's conversation with Frank Rich earlier. Joining us now is NPR senior news analyst Daniel Shore. Dan.
Neil.
What can we say on a day like this?
Well, the first thing to say after listening to Karen Hughes is that it becomes important, and it's interesting that it is so important, to establish the authority of the government and the fact that there is a federal government still working. Obviously, the needs of security for the president and other members of the administration played an important part in the way they took him from one Air Force base to Offutt Air Force Base in Nebraska and finally somewhere else. And there's been a little bit of unsureness about where he is, and perhaps that's proper. But then he did appear on television, and now we have Karen Hughes speaking for him because there's a sense this whole tragedy, this whole atrocity is so great as to make questions rise about whether the government is still functioning. So establishing government authority is one of, the, I think, the three main missions that the government has now, the other two being rescue and taking care of the victims as best you can. And then finally, the question of detection and possible retaliation, which is down the road a little bit, but I think will become a very important factor.
And you are talking about very important but immediate questions. There are longer-term questions about what changed today in this country and around the world.
I think that's right. I think that it's the beginning of some new era in our national life. You would think now how dated sounds the discussion only yesterday about the Pentagon and whether we were going to have missile defense and whether we could fight 2.5 or is it 1.5 or is it 2 regional wars and so on. This whole question now of the asymmetric attack on the United States has now reached its glory, I guess, if that is the word. It is no longer a question of thinking in old categories about how this country defends itself. It has to go find a whole new way of defending itself, and that may start somewhere in Afghanistan.
And as you look at those changes in the world, you're among those, Dan, we call you senior news analyst for a reason. We've been hearing analogies to Pearl Harbor all day.
Yes. Well, but the difference between this and Pearl Harbor is that Pearl Harbor had a return address. There was Japan. And in the end, Japan launched Pearl Harbor, and we struck back against Japan. Now we face the question, against whom do we strike? Where is the rogue states that they talk so much about? How do we know where it is? Clearly, if this is, as most people seem to think it is, the work of Osama bin Laden, he has to have a territorial base. He has to do it from somewhere. I mean, these people clearly were exquisitely trained to be able to get on board and somehow defy security and manage to get on there with weapons and do whatever they did to the pilots and then fly those planes on a route which they knew into these towers. Those things can't be done very easily. They can't be done just as by a Palestinian suicide bomber wrapping a lot of explosives around himself and letting himself go off that way. And so we are dealing with a whole new era of national defense, and I think we'll be hearing that in months to come.
NPR senior news analyst Daniel Shore, thank you very much.
Sure.
To recap what we know, 3 passenger jets, apparently hijacked, slammed into crowded buildings today. 2 hit the World Trade Center towers in New York. The other hit the Pentagon. A 4th plane crashed near Pittsburgh in southwestern Pennsylvania shortly thereafter. The huge World Trade Center buildings collapsed. No one knows the death toll, but it is bound to be excruciatingly high. 50,000 people work in the World Trade Center on a normal day. Thousands of others visit the buildings, and many thousands more work at the Pentagon. There were many emergency personnel in and near the World Trade Center buildings when they collapsed. President Bush was in Florida when the terrorist attacks took place. He canceled his schedule and flew to a military base in Nebraska. All of the airports in the country are closed. Government offices here in Washington and in surrounding states shut down. Many businesses have closed their doors as well. School children were sent home from school. The nation stopped in shock to think and mourn. And the nation waits for news about casualties and about who did this and why. NPR's special coverage will continue on All Things Considered with Linda Wertheimer and Noah Adams here in Washington, and Robert Siegel will join them from New York. I'm Neil Conan, and you're listening to a special report from NPR News. NPR News will provide special coverage throughout the day and night to keep you informed of today's events, events President Bush has described as an apparent terrorist attack. In a few moments, Noah Adams, Linda Wertheimer, and Robert Siegel will continue news coverage of today's events on All Things Considered. NPR News will provide special news coverage throughout the day and the night to keep you informed of what's happening, where it's happening, and to the extent we're able, why. This is NPR News. Listen to NPR News all night long and through the day tomorrow for updates on the devastating terrorist attacks on the United States. We'll have the latest details on those killed and injured and more information on how the attacks are affecting life in New York and Washington and around the country. Continuing coverage of the terrorist assaults on the United States tomorrow on NPR News.